Hello, I'm Alice from Alice's Hidden Pearls.
My name is Arina of Real Exclusive Shop.
This is Danny Jewel, and the name of my shop is Dapper Dan's Delights.
Hi, I'm Mary.
And I'm Tess, and this is the Etsy Success Podcast.
We're part of the seller marketing team here at Etsy, broadcasting from Etsy's headquarters in Brooklyn.
This podcast is powered by Etsy and is your source for tips on improving your shop and for inspiration from your fellow sellers. So today's episode is about product development, which is something that as a consumer, I don't really think about very much. Like, you don't really think about so many of the steps that are taken to lead a new product to reality.
Yeah, I feel like as like a buyer, new products being developed and that kind of thing is like a given. It's not something you like consider. Like, oh, this person had to develop a new product. Mm-hmm. But on the other end of it, it's very labor intensive.
Yeah, it takes, there's so much more behind the scenes work. You have to like figure out what you want to start making, like if you're going to even enjoy making it. You might have to learn a new skill to be able to make it. And you have to make sure it's worth the time and the effort and material costs.
Yeah, and you just have to like refine that product.
Over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even before you make it available to people.
Yeah. I heard that's actually something you're going through right now, Mary.
A little bit. Yeah. So I sell soaps and lots of natural like skincare products and that kind of thing. So I have been using natural deodorant that I haven't made. But I was looking into it, and the natural deodorant that I have been using, a few different brands even, have been extremely irritating to my skin. Mm. And I looked into it, and baking soda is the main ingredient in these kinds of things, and that can be really irritating for people with sensitive skin. So I was like, well, great. Like, I want to keep having ingredients that I know what they are in my skincare products and in my deodorant. So this weekend, actually, I made my first prototype of a different kind of deodorant that uses clay instead of baking soda, and I'm wearing it today. I'm probably gonna have to like iterate on it several times and wear it for several days before I even like start iterating on it. So we'll see how it goes. I'm hopeful about it. My skin is not irritated yet, so that's a good sign.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like you need a good solid few days.
Yeah, schedule it for like the day you're giving a presentation.
Oh, I don't know if I would try it that day. I'm not confident in it yet.
not quite there.
No, but it smells wonderful.
Oh, yeah. So, well, what is the scent that you've started with?
Clary sage and orange, which are like known for their antibacterial qualities. So it's citrusy and like fresh.
Yeah. So that's just one example of something that could inspire a new item in someone's shop. Could just be filling a need of your own. It could also be filling a space in your shop for a new price point. I know that it can go in both directions, really. Like, I've heard of this one leather worker who started out making smaller like keychains or like tool rolls for mechanics and barbers, and then eventually realized that he could actually extend to a more luxury item and make leather aprons for barbers, which was a much higher price point. It took a lot more effort, but he was able to market it as another tool for barbers because he made them custom to fit their measurements and everything. That's really smart. Yeah.
That's like so smart. I like, it's one of those things where it's, you're like, oh, I never would have thought of
that. And it's something that takes so much effort in addition to just keeping your shop running on your own. And you have to be ready to like put aside the time to really develop that product. But he took that risk and now it's a bestseller in his shop. But then I've also seen it in the other way of someone who makes stained glass art, and then she ended up actually scaling it down to make jewelry so it could be a little bit, you know, more affordable for some people. But it's also just so cool. Like, I've never seen jewelry that looks like what she makes.
It also just makes it much more functional. It just like makes you like think about stained glass art in like a different context completely.
Yeah. And even if there isn't a functional reason that you want to make a new product, you could also be inspired by a trend. There's another leather worker that I follow who makes really beautiful shoes. She then moved into making home decor because she started making lampshades, which was really unique.
Yeah,
really cool.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, it's
maybe
really beautiful.
I'm ignorant, but I've never heard of that before. That sounds
beautiful.
Really cool.
And then now, more recently, I don't know if you're aware, but berets have been very on trend in the fashion world.
I'm very aware of it, but I'm actually only aware of it because of our friend Bridget, who we talked to in the last episode about social media.
Yeah, she rocks them.
Bridget's really good at wearing braids. She's like got the down pat. Well, she just like has like the like her hair works with it. Like she's just like she's good at styling it in such a way. It like really works for her.
Definitely. But yeah, this leather worker made leather berets, which is also something that I feel like you don't see quite as often. You know, usually you see them wool or like other materials. So I thought that was really cool. But yeah, then past all of that, then you have to think about how you're going to brand it and market it in your shop and make it fit in with your aesthetic. So I talked about all of these steps from, you know, the brainstorming ideas phase to the marketing phase with Angie Johnson of the Etsy shop Norwegian Wood. She's written multiple articles for our seller handbook about product development, and she's spoken on the topic at the Etsy Up conference in 2016. Her shop has undergone lots of changes since she opened in 2007. She worked in fashion before she opened, and now she focuses primarily on home decor. So, hi, Angie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. So, when you opened your shop in 2007, you lived in Montreal, but a few years ago, you moved to California. How have things changed in your business since you first started?
Oh, in so many ways. When I first started, I really didn't understand exactly what I wanted my brand to be. I just knew I liked making things, and I'd heard about Etsy, and it seemed like a great way to kind of experiment and play. But I also kind of thought there was an Etsy aesthetic. It was the early days of Etsy, so there was a lot of kind of cutesy, folksy things. So in the beginning, that's what I was making. I was making plush owls. I was making pincushions that looked like a log, like all really cutesy, craftsy things. And then I kind of got in touch with some fashion bloggers and realized, hey, I can do me on Etsy as well. And then I started getting into the fashion stuff. Now into the homewares field, which, I mean, I've kind of always loved homewares. I've totally always loved homewares. So when I moved to California, I just felt like, oh, this is a time for a change. Like, what do I want to do with myself? It's part of the beauty of owning your own business is like, you're the boss. You get to decide. So I thought, what the heck am I doing? I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah. What's the first step that you take when you're brainstorming fresh ideas for products?
I definitely it ebbs and flows, which I think a lot of creative people can relate to. And it seems like when it flows, it just really flows. It all comes out. So for me, the first step is taking notes. I used to think, oh, I'll just remember my ideas. It's totally not true. So now I just try to write everything down, and I just have an ongoing list in my phone of product ideas. Because sometimes you're out shopping and you think, oh, that's kind of cool, but it'd be better if it was like this, if I changed this and this. Or you're at a friend's house and they're like, I really wish I had blank. And you can be like, oh, I could design that. So just keeping a constant list. And then if something keeps popping up in my head over and over again, I'll be like, this is a good idea. I'm going to pursue this further. And then the next step really for me is actually costing. So figuring out what the cost of making the item would be and seeing, is it feasible to sell this item?
How do you go about analyzing the costs and production to determine if it's going to be right for your business?
The first step for me is always the materials, like sourcing the materials. And, you know, pretty much every material is available at different price points. And that is connected to quality, of course. So it's finding the perfect balance of the right quality and the right price, right availability. Like, I don't want to be shipping stuff from overseas, like to get a certain wood or something or a certain fabric, unless it's absolutely necessary. So a lot of research and juggling all the variables to come up with something that makes sense.
Are there any other variables besides material and the sourcing aspect?
Well, the amount of time it takes to make something for sure. So sometimes I'll come up with an idea and I'll make the first one, like I would call it a prototype. The prototype always does take longer than, you know, once you really get into it, but you get a good idea of how difficult it is or the complications involved and if you can streamline the process. So making, like the actual art of making something, you learn a lot. So sometimes you have to just get in there and make it.
How do you ensure that your new product stands out from the rest?
I do a lot of research on that as well. I look on Etsy. I look on all different websites to see, is someone making this already? And are they doing it way cheaper than I ever could or way better? Just to make sure my idea really is unique and it's going to catch their eye. I have a couple ideas that are brewing, and those ideas kind of came about through conversations I've had with friends about things they need for their spaces that they can't find. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way, just, you know, talking to people who use the type of products that you make. anyone else who's your competitor, like big retailers, like for me, I'll look at West Elm, I'll look at CB2, I'll see what those home decor sites are making, because I don't want to make something that people can already get from them for like a really cheap price, or just, I don't want to make something that's already, you know, everyone's making.
Yeah. How do you think about your target market when you're developing new products?
For me, I really try to pull on my experiences selling in person. Like when I do craft shows and things like that, I try to like close my eyes and think back to all the people I met, because I'll meet hundreds and hundreds of people in a day. And like, that's my target market. If they've come into my booth and they obviously like what I'm making and they're buying stuff, like it's them. So I think some people get an idea in their head of who they want their target market to be, but it's really important to pause and be like, no, I've met them. Who are they? What have I learned from them?
Yeah, what kinds of things have you learned from those interactions?
Okay, I've learned number one, men hate pillows. Oh my God. All these women are kind of juggling this delicate balance. And I mean, obviously this is in like classic heterosexual couples I'm talking about, mm-hmm. but everybody's husband hates pillows. So they're like, oh, I have to find a pillow that my husband will also like, and not too many. I'm only allowed to have three. And it's like a real thing. So I'm like, okay, I got to be sensitive to this. And I'm actually trying to streamline that process by, I'm going to start offering pre-selected packets for like a bed makeover kind of thing, so that you can just like show your partner, hey, this is what it's going to look like. What do you think of that? And then the partner can be like, oh yeah, I like that. Rather than like, I have this vision, I'm pulling together these pillows, and the partner can't imagine it. So that's one thing I've definitely learned from meeting people in person. Like, they're not usually buying just for themselves. They're buying for other people that live in their home with them.
I think another thing that is important for people to think about with target market is the price points that they can offer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get a lot of price feedback at shows. Because I've been doing this so long, I have a pretty good feeling of what the average customer will spend. And then also, like, back to the boring research, just seeing what prices your competitors are selling things at. It doesn't mean you have to like undercut them, just to know what's going on and know how you're going in. I knew for my pillows, for example, the average price points. So I thought, okay, if I want to sell mine at this price point, mine has to have really special high quality details. So I made sure that I had that. You know, if I wanted to be at the $40 price point, I wouldn't be having my custom made zippers and things like that.
Yeah. And when I was looking at your shop, I thought it was so cool how you took similar patterns and fabrics from your pillows and turned them into wall hangings. So that way you could offer a more luxury item and appeal to buyers with higher price points.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a really good example too, the wall hangings. I'm going to be offering two new sizes in the spring. And that's number one, customer feedback brought me to that point. And then also the idea of multiple price points, and then also multiple sizes of homes. You know, people have small apartments, people have huge mansions, and they have different size walls.
And was that feedback from in-person sales, or where did you get that feedback?
A bit of both, but more in-person sales. You know, if they're right in your face, they'll just be like, do you have this in another size?
Yeah. How have you maintained focus in your brand as you've developed new products?
That has definitely been a really big challenge. For me, I find it really helps to write things down and create little mood boards or storyboards. I do them on Pinterest often, and I'll just kind of pull together a bunch of images that will focus me and point me in the right direction in terms of textures and color, art direction, styling, just to kind of regroup. I do it only about twice a year, but I find it's really helpful just to have somewhere to go back to. Say you're having a bad day and you're having a hard time making decisions. It happens a lot. A lot of us work from home. A lot of us work alone. We don't necessarily have someone else to ask. So you can kind of like ask your previous self by looking at a storyboard that you created, you know, months ago. And sometimes you make mistakes. Like you just get caught an idea and you're like, I love it, I'm gonna be stubborn. And then you make it and you photograph it. And then I've literally even posted it online, and then you just see the picture of it. You're like, oh no, that doesn't fit at all. And then you just delete it, because that's part of the learning curve. Sometimes with the clothing, I would have like a very kind of a more sleek modern collection, but I have that boho like deep inside of me, and I would just make this crazy dress. I'm like, what? What was I thinking? I guess I just wanted to make myself a dress. Like, that's all that should have been. You know, editing, it's hard, it's heartbreaking sometimes, but it's important.
now going on to like the next phase of maybe you've come up with a prototype or have produced a product, how do you go about testing the new product idea and then reviewing its performance?
I'm a big fan of prototyping. So making something, for me specifically because it's homewares, I'll like hang it up on a wall. I'll kind of play with it a bit, style it with some of my belongings, just see how it actually works, see if the proportions are good. How easy is it to work with? Is it awkward in some strange way? And if I find it's awkward or not working, then I'll kind of, sometimes I'll rip it apart. Sometimes I'll chuck it across the room in a fit of anger. Like, it depends. But sometimes it works. And then you're like, okay, I feel it again. I feel it in my gut, or it's just working. And then if it's not, the challenge there is to be like, oh man, I just spent like 8 hours making this thing. I'm going to go back to the drawing board. It's hard to like let yourself down that way. But it's good to recognize that it's happening and be like, no, this is part of the process. This is not me failing at doing my job. This happens to everyone. I'm just going to go forward and fix it. I will often preview things on Instagram in stories. I think stories are a really great tool for getting quick feedback that doesn't have to be super polished. So I'll sometimes even preview new fabrics there to see what kind of reaction I'll get from people. I'll do a little poll on which fabric they like better, and that can help me go in the right direction. One thing I do when I have a new collection to launch out into the world is I'll do a mini photo shoot for that grouping that has a really focused aesthetic point of view. And then I'll just really try to push those images out real hard, push them onto every platform that I use, put them out through my newsletter, Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, everything. So I've done that a few times, and I think that really helps because it takes people a couple times seeing the same image to really remember that they've seen it and then be like, what is that? And get engaged with it. So a big push of recognizable imagery all at once, I would say, is one thing that I do. I'll give sneak peeks in my stories, like just a corner of something or not the full image, just to let people know like, hey, keep your eyes open because something's coming.
Yeah. What prep did you do before deciding to hire an employee?
I sat down and looked at all my financials for the last year and kind of figured out, okay, if I have this person, how much can I up my production so that they can pay for themselves? And my goal for the first year was just make enough additional sales to pay for them. So in that sense, I wouldn't be in any different financial state personally. I would just be like making more money that would be going directly to that person. And I figured if I can do that, then that's a good way to not be terrified to try this. And very quickly, it showed that it was making me more money because we were able to take on more wholesale accounts that I had to say no to before and things like that. It just opened some doors. So I would suggest people just make sure that you can make sure that they cover their own cost, that you're going to sell that much more. And that's a good starting point.
What other management tips do you have for sellers that might be thinking about hiring help?
The most important thing is to give your employees some autonomy to keep them happy. To me, the most important thing was that they enjoyed coming into work every day. So I would do things like ask them, what playlists do you want to play today? Or I would bring in little snacks from the bakery and lots of little things like that. When you hire someone, you're agreeing on their salary from the beginning. So like that's decided on, that's out of the way. But then what can I do above and beyond that to make their time pleasant? Because people will do their best work if they're happy, if the environment's good. And giving them some autonomy on their tasks throughout the week. Like, here's what we need to get done. These are the days we have to do it. What days do you want to do what things? Like, let's figure it out together. And it's very, very hard because when you're working by yourself for years, you're giving up your baby a little bit when you're letting someone else help you with things. But, you know, start small. Like, at first it was very hard for me. Like, no one else was sewing. I was like, no way is anyone sewing any of this stuff. Like, you can go cut elastics, or like, there was like a lot of little tasks of like cutting repetitive things. But I mean, luckily I hired someone who really enjoyed doing that. And you have to know what the person's going to be doing when you hire someone, and tell them really bluntly. Don't let them think they're going to be designing something if they're not. Be really blunt about that upfront, because otherwise it's just going to create headaches for you later.
What was it like to scale back to being a one-woman show when you moved from Montreal to California?
Oh, it's such a relief. I was actually very lucky that I had some really, really wonderful employees in the time that I had employees. I had one girl who was with me for 4 years. It's a lot of work to manage people. It does take time. You know, you have to figure out your payroll stuff. You have to make sure that you have work for them to do when they come in. I felt like it was really important to not just have employees that were kind of like on call when I need extra help. I wanted to give them regular hours so they could have a reliable income and know exactly what they were getting. I just ethically, I felt like that was the right thing to do. So sometimes they would come in and I didn't really have urgent work for them to do, but I had made the commitment to that. So I had to like find the work for them to do. It's definitely a juggling act. It's fun to just be on my own and have my time to myself in terms of I make my own schedule 100% for myself. But I'm glad I had them at one point, because what we were doing at that point, I never could have done alone. Never in a million years.
Yeah? Like what?
Just the amount of product we were creating. Like, we were also working with Topshop at one point and doing a collection for Anthropology. And just having someone to, like, my employee Lissa was so good. She would help with a lot of the pattern work. I know how to do all my own pattern work, and I did for years, but it's very time consuming. And sometimes it would affect your creativity. Like, ugh, I don't want to do that pattern, so I'm not going to make this thing. But when you have someone that can do the pattern and be like, okay, well, I don't have anything else for you to do today, so you're going to spend today creating this elaborate pattern. And she loved pattern work. So it really worked out, because we would come up with some great designs. And there were things that I probably wouldn't have done if I was the one who had to sit there and do the pattern work.
So back to that idea of laterally changing your business. I know that growing bigger isn't the primary goal for a lot of sellers. So what has growth and success looked like for your business?
It's changed so much over the years. Even if I think back and think about what I used to want and what I now want, I think the lesson I've kind of got from that is that it's okay to change. Because sometimes it felt like giving up. Sometimes shrinking the business back down after doing something really big felt like a form of failure or giving up, which didn't sit well with me, and which was really something I had to deal with and think about a lot. For me now, I feel like success is, do I have a roof over my head? Do I have food? Am I comfortable? Am I stressed about paying my bills? Sometimes when you grow, you have a lot more bills. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's different ways you can not have a lot of bills. Sometimes it's making a lot more money. Sometimes it's having less bills. So just deciding, this is my life. What do I want my lifestyle to really be? What do I want my days to include? And figuring that out just for me, and not caring about other people's idea of success or comparing my brand to someone else's brand. It's a real path that everyone has to go down on their own, I think.
I think it's just something that people don't always consider. Like, they don't think that there's another option. They're like, oh, it's only getting bigger. That's the goal.
Yeah. I mean, I used to think that. It's very, very normal, I think, to think that. I think that that's what generally our culture considers to be success and the goal that everyone's expected to drive towards. But there's nothing wrong with doing that either. Like, if that's your goal, awesome, good. Go get it. But if it's not your goal, it's also okay.
Yeah. Also on the topic of change, what's been the trickiest part of adapting and keeping your shop fresh?
It's very time consuming to create imagery, to create all the visuals. So just finding and making the time to do that. I've been struggling with that so much since we moved, because our house is under renovations. So it's like, I don't have a corner to photograph anything in right now. And especially nowadays with Instagram and stuff like that, there's such a demand for constant, new, high-quality visuals.
Yeah, and I also think that trends can be really key in staying fresh. Do you do any research in that realm?
I think the thing with trends is that either you pay attention to them or you don't. And coming from a fashion background, I think the whole reason I got into fashion is because I am aware of trends. And it's kind of like my brain is this little machine that is constantly absorbing information from everything I see everywhere. And then it pumps out an idea at the end. And that idea has gone through a filter of trends. So I don't actively sit down and make trend lists or anything like that, but they're in my brain. And I kind of do a little bit through Pinterest. I have so many Pinterest boards. Like, I think I have over 100 that are public. Never mind my secret ones. I'll start noticing something a lot and I'll just make a board about it. And then I'll just scroll through Pinterest. And if I see that trend again, I'll just throw it on the board. And then later I'll just look through my boards and be like, oh yeah, that board has 50 pins. There's something there.
Is it always a concept that's relevant to what you make, or is it just anything?
Not at all. I have boards for everything. Nail art, hair, makeup, like colors, art, pottery, everything.
Yeah, I think that's really speaks to the idea of staying fresh and everything, because you never know when those other categories might overlap with your own.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Are there any trends that you're currently exploring in your shop?
There's trends that are on the horizon that I don't feel they're represented well in my shop yet, but they will be. Some color trends, some aesthetic trends. I mean, whether we like it or not, the 80s and the 90s are coming back in home decor. So there's going to be a lot of the of kind of 80s and 90s shapes that are actually Art Deco reminiscent. So some of those kinds of things. Moving a little bit away from the bohemian. I mean, it's still going to be a bit bohemian and eclectic because it's a rehash of an old decade, but cleaner lines, different shapes.
What would you say the hardest part of running your own business is?
Self-discipline. It's been a challenge since day one. You don't have anyone looking over your shoulder. Like, you're only accountable to yourself. You can spiral. Like, you can get down on yourself because you didn't get as much done as you wanted to, or maybe you did a show and you didn't sell as much as you wanted. And it's really hard to over and over and over again pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and get back to it if something doesn't go well. When things are going great, it's easy. You're just like plowing ahead and you're like pumped on the adrenaline of success and you're like, yeah, but it's not always going to go well. It's just not for anyone. So, you know, picking yourself up after the hard parts is the most difficult thing, I think.
And have you learned anything specific about how to pick yourself up?
Knowing that it's not forever. Like, the way you feel right now is not forever. Things get bad and things get better, and they don't always stay bad and they don't always stay good. It will change. And to just give yourself a break, like literally a break, like I'm going to take a day off and I'm going to go do something really fun that I love to do and get out of the house and see people and go to a museum or go to an art show or go see a band play, like do something that's out in the creative world where someone else can inspire you. It's really hard to remember, though. I literally have to relearn this lesson like every 6 months, every year, every month, like it changes.
Okay, so now it's time for the lightning round. We collected questions from other sellers in the forums for you to answer. Are you ready?
Ready.
Holly Hinkle from Holly's Ornaments asks, did you start with a business plan? And if you didn't, what would you tell someone just starting their store to put into their plan of action?
I did not start Norwegian Wood with a business plan. I have started other businesses with business plans, though. So I'm not anti-business plan. You need to start with a clear focus on what is your brand. And that's not something I necessarily did because I started my brand 10 years ago. But nowadays, I think you really need to start with knowing, what is this brand all about? Who is it for? What is its purpose? And just ask yourself a few questions. Maybe you don't need a full business plan, but a few focused questions, and literally write down the answers just to keep you on a path.
Sarah S. from An Acquired Home says, it looks like your products are photographed in natural light. Do you have any tips for using natural light, whether on the photo side or the editing side?
It's true. A lot of my photos are done with natural light. However, I do also use a light kit, and they have natural light bulbs, so that helps a lot. So I use those on days that are really overcast or to fill in shadows. And then I am actually trained in graphic design as well. So I edit all my photos in Photoshop to make the light consistent throughout all of them. I have a little template that I follow, that this is my base level lighting. So I pull that base level lighting image up, and then I make sure all my other images match that one.
Say It Salted asks, what's the biggest mistake you've had to fix?
Oh boy, there's so many. It's hard to keep track. I think in general, taking on more than I can handle and not doing those things as well as I could have because I took on too much. I just learned to not do that again. And I'm still learning all the time, but really learning how to say no to things.
Well, thanks so much for talking with me today, Angie.
Thanks so much for having me.
As always, we'd like to bring this episode to a close with our favorite segment, Shop Talk. We post a question in the forums and on the Etsy Success social channels, and you send us your answer by either calling in or emailing us a voice memo. We asked you to tell us about a challenge you've overcome in your business. Here are some of your stories.
Hi, I'm Christina from Wine Card Co., and the most challenging moment in my shop was the time between opening it and my first sale. It was exhilarating to put my product out there, yet completely intimidating to put myself out there. Doubts kept running through my head. Would anyone buy my cards? What if people looked at my shop and saw zero sales? What would my family and friends think of me? It was challenging to quiet these insecurities, but I kept going. I kept adding listings, I kept making those listings better, and I kept believing that my creativity had a purpose and that I was meant to succeed. It was almost exactly 1 year ago today that I had my first sale and the ball started rolling. I will always be thankful that I endured that challenging moment, as it taught me that something great is always right around the corner.
This is Jacinta from the Laminated Cotton Shop. One of our biggest challenges, well, our biggest challenge, was being able to service US customers all the way from Australia in a timely manner, in a way that orders arrive just how we want them to. So we actually had to do a lot of research, and we ended up partnering with DHL e-commerce, and we found that they were the best service for us. And we get orders delivered to US customers from Australia within 1 to 2 weeks. They also attract, and we haven't had any issues with orders going missing. We've actually had an increase in US sales in that time. We've also had an increase in positive feedback from customers. So just achieving those goals of being able to service all customers around the world in a timely manner is something we're quite proud of.
Hi, this is Barb Tucker, and my shop is Baby Tuckers by Barb. The biggest obstacle I've had to achieve during my crocheting days is to basically reteach myself how to crochet after breaking my neck and having a pretty serious surgery, which required me to hold my crocheting up in front of my face. Anyone that crochets knows this is probably not the easiest way to crochet, but I've taught myself and it seems to be working for me. And thanks to the support of my family and all my customers, I've been able to achieve crocheting again.
That's it for today. Be on the lookout for our next episode in early March. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.